This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, online at reformedforum.org. This is the Reformed Media Review, episode number 18. Today we discuss books on apologetics. It's time for another Reform Media Review. My name is Camden Busey. This is episode number 18. We're quite a ways behind Christ the Center. As of our recording, I think is on 102. Maybe we'll catch up. I'm sitting here in the studio with Jonathan Brack, who is admissions counselor at Westminster Theological Seminary, also a student working on his MDiv alongside me there. And we have Jared Oliphant, who's director of admissions at Westminster Theological Seminary in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. For all you Westminster Seminary, California guys, I'm going to clarify this from now on. Welcome. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me here.
Thanks for being here, Camden.
At your own studio, Camden. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I know how it goes. Well, last episode, we had a great discussion, I thought, on the DVD Collision, Is Christianity Good for the World?, a documentary of a series of debates between Christopher Hitchens and Douglas Wilson. And we want to piggyback along that discussion and today talk about apologetics books, just discussing all sorts of books that are out there, what we think's helpful, what we think is not so helpful. And I'd even like to suggest what order to read them in, because that could be very helpful for people who don't know much about apologetics, where to start, where to go. I mean, you're not going to pick up Van Til's Intro to Systematic Theology and read it first.
Right.
That would be foolish.
Yeah.
Okay, so where do we start? Any ideas? Just, we don't have to start at the basic level right now, but what are some books that you read early on? Both of you have apologetically minded fathers, people very interested in Van Til. Jared, especially, your dad's a professor at Westminster Theological Seminary, right. Scott Oliphant, spelled with INT.
Good,
some people
spelled
it INT. Yeah. But anyway, where did you guys start? What were some of the early books you read? I'm curious to see if they're the same ones I read.
Yeah, that's funny. I really didn't pick up Van Til until college. And the reason I say that kind of,
you mean you weren't catechized?
I know, right? Exactly. The reason I say that with kind of an element of surprise is, my dad he picked up Van Til back in, when was it? It was like, 75 or 76.
Yeah.
And I was born in 79.
When he had the big square glasses, the tinted glasses,
right.
Big beard and the big hair.
Right. And funny enough, this really isn't a plug, but if you want to hear
the
that
Westminster
story,
magazine.
Yeah, the Westminster Today magazine just has a whole story on that. That's pretty interesting. Contact us at, communications@wts.edu if you want one of those. But, all that is to say, I didn't pick it up until freshman year of college. And, I was just getting into debates at, Gordon College. And it was part of the group was called Residents of Berea. So it was looking at everything through the lens of scripture. It was started by one of my reform buddies at Gordon College. Gordon College is a broadly evangelical school.
And where is it?
That's in around Boston.
Right. Just for people so they know.
Yeah, right. North Shore area. So anyway.
Not Gordon Conwell.
No. It's right down the road. Yeah.
Right.
But anyway, I was looking at a lot of things more carefully, my own tradition and just Christianity in general, and I realized I had a severe lack of defending what I had grown up believing. And so I really started with apologetics, and because of that, I started with Van Til. He was kind of the guy that I had heard of at that point. So I picked up Van Til's Apologetic by Greg Bahnsen.
Oh, yeah.
And that was obviously a recommendation. And just started going through that. And then that opened the door to a lot of Van Til's original works. I was reading those alongside. So that's where I started. And it served me well. I don't know if I would recommend everyone starting in apologetics at that level, because it is a little heady at times. And I was a philosophy major, so I was kind of used to that academic writing. But it's really helpful in just systematizing Van Til. So I would recommend it for those people who want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely, for people that have a footing, recommend Van Til's Apologetic. I read that fairly early on as well. What about you, Jonathan? Where did you read that in your development?
I started reading Van Til's Apologetic right before college, because my father owned it, and I was already into the subject.
You majored in philosophy too, right?
Right, I majored in philosophy at Texas A&M.
So you had a an inclination toward that sort of thing.
I already knew going into a philosophy degree that I wanted to do apologetics later on. As of right now, I'm not so sure if that's actually where the Lord is leading me, but that's what, you know, I was enamored with at the time. As I actually asked Dr. Oliphant, you know, for some recommendations for college, what should I do? He said, if you want to do apologetics, get a good philosophy undergrad under your belt. Yeah. And then a lot of the apologetics dialogue will make a lot more sense. But my progression into being or calling myself a presuppositional apologetics person of the faith. I don't know if that phrase even makes sense.
I don't know if you meant apologist.
I think you meant apologist. I just said apologist, right? I could have just ended it there. It started with Pratt.
Richard Pratt, yeah.
Right. Every Thought Captive.
Yeah.
And it was basically that bridged a lot of just Sunday school level, reformed, rock ribbed Calvinism to apologetics. And from there, I began actually listening to debates because I wanted to hear it, you know, debated. And then after that, I have to recommend Josh McDowell's, just kidding. Actually, after that, the first thing I read after that was my father bought me a book called Always Ready.
Yes.
And that was by Greg Bonson.
Right.
And I would recommend that as a prequel to the apologetics reader, the Bonson reader that we were just talking about. Because
yeah, I wouldn't recommend reading Van Til's apologetic right off the bat either. Right. It just so happened I read it fairly early on, but Every Thought Captive to Always Ready to Van Til's apologetics, actually a pretty good order, I think.
Yeah, I definitely think so, because and actually now thinking back on the subject, I would actually even say in between Always Ready and the apologetics reader, I would say read Calvin's Institutes.
Oh, you got
reread it.
True.
Why is that? Now, I know what you're going to say, but why don't we explain why that would be important? Especially book one.
I would say that right off the bat, to show that Van Til is not necessarily doing anything groundbreaking, but is doing his best to stay within his lineage of mm-hmm. Reformed thinking, mm-hmm. where his whole, you know, epistemology, his whole ontology, his whole worldview, it starts with theology and not philosophy. And the same with Calvin.
The self-revealed God. Yeah. Right.
And although, even though in Survey of Epistemology by Van Til, even though he delicately, just very, like, you know, a father brushing the hair of his son, just delicately critiques Calvin, there are some tendencies that are that would be sort of a naturalistic worldview in Calvin that Van Til points out. But on the whole, you can see the direct lineage between Calvin and Van Til if you read from, you know, Always Ready, which starts at there is no neutrality. If you get that under your belt and then you read Calvin's Institutes, where that's not a new concept to Van Til's apologetic, I think is a smooth transition.
Yeah, you need to have a solid base in Calvin, not only Calvin, just the tradition in general, mm-hmm. because the presuppositional apologetic or the Van Tilian system doesn't make sense without Reformed Christianity. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Right.
And we're absolutely convinced that Reformed Christianity is Christianity coming to its own.
That's right.
And that the Van Tilian apologetic, we're not apologizing, you know, pardon the pun, about this, but we do think it's the most consistent Reformed apologetic.
Yeah.
We're not going to back away from that. I know that's some right. people questioned us in episode Crisis Center 100 about that. I'm unashamed to say that.
Yeah.
That's why I came to Westminster Theological Seminary.
Yeah.
Right.
It's following Paul. It's following Calvin and the rest of the Reformers when they start to theology.
We're convinced that that's the case.
Yeah.
But a lot of guys will be in college and get interested in philosophy or interested in discussions and evangelism, which is awesome and great, but you can't go from there strictly straight to apologetics. You can, but at least while you're doing that, make sure you've got a good solid base in Reformed theology. A That's great right. place to go there if you don't have it is the Shorter Catechism, the Westminster Shorter Catechism. read Calvin, read some solid works on Reformed theology. That'll give you the platform for understanding reality, but also for understanding who God is, how he has communicated to us, and who we are.
Yeah, I see systematic theology and apologetics as really two sides of the same coin.
It's really hard to distinguish the two sometimes, isn't
it? It really is, yeah. And you can obviously focus on one, but you can never neglect the other. So if your field is apologetics, great. You have to be theologically minded while you do that. If you're systematically minded, you've got to maintain your ear to what's going on in apologetics and how you're consistently defending the faith.
I think Westminster's position on that is borne out by your father, whose title is a professor of apologetics and systematic theology.
That's true.
He's a member of both departments.
Yeah.
And that's no accident.
Right.
The same way for Dr. Gaffin, while he was still active, he's still active, don't get me wrong, but he's emeritus now,
uh-huh.
is what I mean, moved between the systematics and the New Testament department.
That's right.
Because we have a certain view of biblical theology that informs and is bound up with systematic theology. Likewise, mm-hmm. we have at Westminster a view of apologetics that is thoroughly bound up with our systematics, and it can be no other way.
Yeah, and take a look at Machen. He was a New Testament scholar who spoke a lot on apologetics. He recognized his limits. I mean, he was very mindful of what was going on in apologetics. Christianity and liberalism is really an apologetic of sorts. But he recognized that Van Til was doing a whole lot more and going beyond really what Machen could do.
Yeah, There's some question as to how much he was a Van Tilian or how much he disagreed on Van Til's position.
Yeah.
And there are some reasons why he might have selected Van Til rather than some other people. But regardless, he was apologetically minded.
Yeah, that's the point, is that he had his feet in both of those fields.
Yeah.
For absolutely. A reason.
Absolutely. So we've got a... a solid base or some foundation there. So maybe we'll go from every thought captive to always ready. To make sure you're reading Institutes. Right. Then to Van Til's apologetic.
Undergirds all this.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Let me throw another one in. I don't know if either of you have read it already, but it's the latest one from Greg Bahnsen, who incidentally has passed away, but he's still putting out books. Actually, it's a very interesting story. They found the book behind a file cabinet. It had never been published. He lost the galley-proof copy in the midst of... The whole story of this is in the front of the book, recently discovered, published, and I think there's other volumes of it coming out, but this is the first section. I believe it's just called Presuppositional Apologetics.
That's right.
And very much what is criticized of Bahnsen is that he doesn't really get at the systematics of it. He's more philosophy-minded and focuses mostly on epistemology.
Mm-hmm.
More of the systematic stuff comes out in this book.
Hmm.
And it's helpful, and there's a really interesting chapter in there on a revelational epistemology. There's the epistemology again, but I thought that was helpful. But he also goes and criticizes, I believe, Gordon Clark, if I can remember. I read it a while ago. Gordon Clark, E.J. Carnell, and Francis Schaeffer.
Mm-hmm.
Three men who are often called presuppositional, but they're definitely not Van Tilian.
Well,
so he does an interesting thing by criticizing those guys and showing their inconsistencies.
I would love to read that.
Yeah, and that's just following Van Til. He had the critiques back in the day when they were really at the front and center of the apologetic movement back then.
And that book I would place after Always Ready, but still before Van Til's apologetics. So now we've got four books undergirded by Institutes. So I think we're up to maybe $100 now. So what else can we add to the shopping cart for the budding or aspiring apologist?
We can add a library card, and that'll cut down the price a little bit.
But not all libraries have this. You have to do interlibrary loan.
Yeah.
What else do we got here? I mean, surely there are more.
I don't know how to chronologically bridge them, or even conceptually, but I would say that after that, that's when I read Reasons for Faith.
By Edgar?
By Dr. Oliphant.
Yeah. Sorry, get those
Reasons, of,
Reasons
the
of the Heart
is what you're thinking of, yeah.
Right.
There is another Reasons for Faith. I forget who wrote it, but there's a lot of reasons in faith books out there.
Common terms.
Did Strobel write one of those?
Maybe.
Anyways, I would not recommend
Reasons for
Strobel
Faith. Sorry,
at
Dr.
any point
Oliphant.
In your Christian career as other than a critique. But there Reasons for Faith.
Yeah.
It does supplement a lot of some of the philosophical.
Yeah. Check out Crisis Center 98, I believe, for that, for a discussion on that. We spent a lot of time on some of the ideas in there. We didn't touch on everything in the book, mm-hmm. but spoke about the ideas there. You can listen. That's a great book. That also has, is there three sections or two major sections of that book? I can't recall.
Good question. It's been a while since I read it. Do you know?
Three.
Yeah, I thought there were three major sections. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely one in there speaking more about, all of it's philosophically minded, but there are different emphases of each section. That's a heavier book. I mean, it's harder. It can be rough sledding for someone who's not familiar with these subjects. But we'd stick that in there probably after Fantil's Apologetic.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
And for those who are more philosophically minded, it's not going to be for every pastor.
No.
You know, not every person in ministry is going to want to pick up that. I mean, you know, that's a tough thing to say. But those who are more philosophically aware, I think, would benefit more than those who may not be aware of all the terms and the concepts going on in that book.
The other side of that, of our progression, is your dad's other book, The Battle Belongs to the Lord,
yeah,
which would be more probably right after Every Thought Captive.
That's right.
Now,
more introductory, but a little more meaty.
Mm-hmm.
Although I read Richard Pratt before Always Ready, if I were to set a chronology today for, you know, my son, I would, or others who ask for my advice, I would begin with The Battle Belongs to the Lord, because that's another instance of a book that a churchman or a layperson can easily understand. There's questions after the chapter.
Yeah, study guide questions, yep.
And it bridges a basic sovereignty issues of the sovereignty of the Lord to apologetics.
Yeah.
And
more,
you can
more
you
of that
can,
relation to systematics there.
Right, yeah. And you can tell just by the title of the book, you know, the whole premise there, which is it's not a neutral, we're going to figure out whether or not, you know, who's right or who's wrong.
Yeah.
It's the battle belongs to the Lord, beginning and end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whether you lose or the argument or not, whether you can give a defense or not. So
yeah.
That's now of course you're going to be called to give a defense, and he'll talk about that in the book, but the book is a good introductory, and I would say it's better than Richard Pratt's, but that's just
a little bit different. I mean, you can read them both. I mean,
yeah. Oh,
but if
yeah.
I had to pick one, I to be honest, would pick The Battle Belongs to the Lord if I had to only pick one to give to somebody.
Right.
Let's step it up a notch. What about some books actually by Van Til? Now, of course, Van Til's Apologetic includes large portions of Van Til's own writing.
Right.
That's what it is. Bonson always starts each chapter with his own discussion, introducing. Then he includes large samples of Van Til, and then he annotates with his own footnotes. So it's a very good volume in that you get Van Til and you get somebody explaining it to you. What about for those who want Van Til straight, no chaser?
Yeah, we, for students who are, or prospective students looking at a seminary, particularly Westminster, we have in our bookcase, if you come in on campus and you get a tour, usually from Jonathan, he takes you around campus, but we have...
The famous Brack tour.
Right, they're well worth it. Come on campus, we'll show you around.
I've said before, even if you're not a prospective student, pretend to be a prospective student.
That's right.
And Jonathan will show you around.
He'll get a tour of ideas, he likes to call it, because we have about four buildings at Westminster. It's not exactly a showcase.
We have a lot of portraits.
I accept tips. So.
But the book that we usually point a lot of prospective students to, if they want to get into... intro to apologetics, particularly Van Til, is Christian Apologetics.
Yeah.
He does...
Which is originally a course syllabus.
Right. Yeah. And it's edited by Bill Egger, and he has some helpful notes in there. And it's basically just kind of laying out the particularities of his own position on apologetics and how it was developing at that time. And, I mean, he does... You know, if you just read the first chapter, you're going to get a lot of concepts that he develops later with Christian Theory of Knowledge, Survey of Christian Apology, Survey of Christian Epistemology, and then also Defense of the
read,
Faith,
actually.
Which is a really more of an in-depth book. But it's a good foundation for reading Van Til, I think, if you want to stick to original sources.
Yeah, if you really can only pick one book from Van Til and you're pretty sharp and you've got a good base in theology,
mm-hmm.
Pick up the 2008 third edition of Defense of the Faith.
Agreed,
I think.
Completely.
Oh, Dr. Yeah, Oliphant annotates it, and it's unedited. It's the whole thing. The version that came out in the 70s was clipped. There was a lot of stuff missing.
Uh-huh.
But the latest edition from PNR, Presbyterian and Reformed Publishers, is all of it.
Yeah.
And more, including discussion and helpful notes by Dr. Oliphant. It's a great book. If you can only pick one of Van Til's and you have a good systematic theology, that's a great place to start.
Yeah.
Dr. Oliphant says the same. He's told me that in class. He says, if you only you really want to get Van Til, read Defense of the Faith.
Yeah.
And then when you're done, read it again. And then when you're done, read it again. Yeah. Keep reading it until you understand it.
Yeah. Right. And we should point out, for those people who haven't read Van Til and really have an interest, expect that some things are not going to be 100% clear when you read them the first go
around. No.
Like Camden said, a lot of these were class syllabi. So they weren't meant for this popular general audience for publication.
Right.
So, you know, people who critique Van Til on that, they're usually right, but they don't get the context of, well, keep reading and take that into the broader context, because he does usually clarify himself, but maybe not in the same chapter.
No, I've loved Van Til, and I've been reading him regularly for 6 years now.
Yeah.
And thoroughly imbibing it. And I just took this THM class, Philosophy for Theologians, and just wrote a paper on Van Til's Trinitarian personality, not his own, but his concept. Some people might say he has a threefold personality the way he writes, but you know what I mean. His theology is Trinitarian theology, and how it relates to personality.
Yeah.
So I had to spend a lot of time reading and trying to synthesize his thoughts. And I must say, reading him and pulling out his general principles and ideas, things started to click for me in ways that I hadn't seen for the first 6 years of reading him.
Mm-hmm.
And the system is just unbelievable.
It is.
But it's not going to make sense necessarily up front. That's why you need to read books like Van Til's Apologetic and the third edition of Defense of the Faith to have the annotation to help describe it.
Yeah.
But the more you read, read critically, but the more you read and the more you understand how his mind works,
mm-hmm.
things will start to click, and you will see the beauty of Reformed theology.
Yeah.
We don't love Van Til just because he's Van Til. We love him because we think he's consistent to the Reformed tradition and faith.
Yeah.
And once you start to see those things and see how he applies a Westminster theology to all of life and to all of philosophy, it is quite an amazing thing.
Yeah, I was going to say that I was obviously already a huge fan of Van Til before I came to Westminster, already reading some of his material. But as soon as Westminster forced me to read who came right before him, which was, you know, Hodge, Warfield, and Kuyper and Boving.
Yeah.
Right.
And then how he's like the key to all those at once.
Yeah.
That's when I found a new appreciation of Van Til, other than just kind of pulling these magic phrases out of the air referred to apologetics.
Yeah.
Van Til kind of collates all those for you. You can get Van Til's kind of the best of Reformed theology, the greatest hits of Reformed theology packed into just these monumental works.
But regrettably, he wasn't a great writer stylistically, so we must say that. Warning. Yeah.
Now, I do have something I'd love to say to
warning,
that.
Warning, Van Til.
All right. I do have something I'd like
Surgeon
to say
General.
To that. And that has come from after being at Westminster. You begin to sort of move up the scale of Van Til literature, right?
Yeah. Where do you go? You start probably with Defense of the Faith or Christian Apologetics.
And then I would say that you end with Christianity and Bardianism or the New Modernism.
That's
probably
true.
Where you end. And I'm currently reading Christianity and Bardianism. And it is... Maybe it's just because I'm used to the way Van Til writes these days, but
it doesn't do good for your papers. Like,
right.
I love reading Van Til, but his English affects mine and it makes my writing worse.
Right, yeah. But I will have to say,
his concepts, not his style. Yeah.
I think that
his concepts, that's not what we're saying, but the stylistically, right. He's got problems. He knew it. Read the biography.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
John Meather says as much.
If we're talking books, excellent book, his biography.
But I have to say that Christianity and Bardianism, I think, is actually well written as the way in which he deals with Bart directly. Because if you listen to Bart, he's very persuasive, But that's because he muddles all the definitions of the words. And then Van Til immediately points that out. I mean, I think it's like in the first 15 pages or so that he shows how this is new wine, but old wine bottles.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's beautiful. That's poetry. It's like, that's a better way for me to think about it as opposed to, he's just equivocating terms. So, I think maybe maybe because he wrote those later on, or maybe because he knows that he's writing those to more of an
intellectual, a different audience, possibly.
He's more comfortable.
Yeah.
And so he can
for many years he was the only critic of Bart in English, became kind of the main man on it because you couldn't read criticism of Bart in English except if you wanted to read, you know, Van Til on it.
Because you couldn't read Bart in English at that point.
Right, because he was only in German, and Van Til was reading the German.
Yeah.
And Van Til's criticism of Bart has itself come under much criticism, but recently has been vindicated by one of the world's greatest Bardians, Bruce McCormick, who has the same interpretation of Bart that Van Til has, and basically says, you know, Van Til got him right.
Yeah.
And so that's a vindication for all those Bardians out there, or people who would read Van Til and say he was too harsh,
right,
or he misread Bart.
Him, yeah.
Well, at least one of the world's greatest Bardians agrees with Van Til's position, except McCormick, of course, instead of going Van Til, goes with Bart on those issues. But that's just a vindication for those who are concerned, who have heard those sorts of things and might say, well, I don't want to read Van Til on Bart because he doesn't read him correctly. Uh-huh. That's not the case. We have good evidence that he did read Bart correctly.
Right. For all you empiricists out there, if you want empirical evidence, you can go down to the basement of the Westminster Library.
Ah, yeah.
And
read The White Elephants.
Right. And
that's what he called his copy of Church Dogmatics, because it had a white binding, apparently.
Right.
Yeah.
And you can open it up
and
you
read
can
his
see
notes.
All the marginalia written in Latin and Dutch and German and English. And so... And it underlined all over, and so the binding is actually falling apart.
Yeah,
and so
not because it's old, but because it was being used so much.
Right. Yeah. Well worn.
Yeah. So
wow,
that's just empirical evidence.
So those are where we would end up with Van Til. Here's a question for you. We've had this discussion before, and it's interesting. Which one of Van Til's books was the hook for you that really either made it click for you or they got you into it? Like, which one was really the hook, line, and sinker, we might say?
The one for me was, like I said, I was a philosophy major, so I was really into those concepts. The first one was A Christian Theory of Knowledge. So it was just dealing with a lot of the things that I was learning in the classroom, and I was seeing the parallels and how he was addressing those kinds of questions that I was studying at the time. So, you know, I don't know if that would be the case for everybody, but for
me... Certainly, there's a lot of biographical context here, but it's interesting to hear nonetheless.
Yeah, that was
for
the
you,
first
that was
one.
The one.
And it lit my fire. I was like, this guy is saying things that I have not heard any other Christian say, you know, in this broadly evangelical context. When I was at Gordon, it was a lot of, evidences for the resurrection and those types of arguments. And, man, those just are not persuasive. Those just end up being, argument battles that usually don't get anywhere. They're just kind of stacks of evidence, and then, you know, whoever has the biggest stack wins, I guess, at that point.
Read Tipton on Acts 17 in Revelation Reason, Reason and Revelation, whichever way it is.
Yeah, Revelation Reason.
And he has an interesting thing in there about evidences.
Nice, yeah.
And, you know, I'd encourage people to read that and see how a worldview, connotation and denotation are intimately related.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, Tom Notaro's book that's called
Van Til and the Use of Evidences.
That's a great,
great
one to pick
book.
Up.
I read that at Wrigley Field.
Okay.
I'm not kidding. Here's the story I'll tell you.
It's the same old story, Van Til and Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
heard it a thousand times.
Two of the greatest things in America's history. funny thing, I had two tickets. I don't want to go off too much on a tangent, but I'll tell you the short story. Had two tickets to Wrigley Field. It was a rainy day. My friend backed out on me. So I called and called and called and called around and couldn't find anyone to go with me. My friend said, you know, whatever, you can't find a guy, I'll pay you for the ticket. I drove to Chicago myself. 2.5-hour drive. So let's listen to some good music on the way up and some lectures. Got to Wrigley Field, rain delay. I'm there by myself.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to play the St. Louis Cardinals, our hated rivals.
Right.
but it's cordial. Not like not like New York and Boston.
Right.
But anyway, sat there. I had the book in my pocket because it's so small.
Uh-huh.
Pulled it out during rain delay. Started reading. I loved it. You know, I was into Van Til. Read the whole book. Rain delay ended. Sun came out. They took the tarp off and they played the whole game.
Wow.
Beautiful day.
There, yeah. There's a good day for you.
Calm and grace.
Van Til evidences and baseball.
Chicago Cubs.
That's America for you.
And they defeat the St. Louis Cardinals.
Nice. Yeah.
So, theory of Christian knowledge.
Christian theory of knowledge, yeah.
Christian theory of knowledge.
And that's really, it was because it was the first one, and I just like locked into him, yeah, you know, within the first chapter. So, that's what did it for me.
Jonathan, what about you? See, I'm like Larry King. Did you see that? Yeah. Did you see that?
Jonathan, Houston, what do you think?
Hello. Here's it all. Jonathan, what do you think?
Survey.
There you
Survey
go.
Survey of.
So you believe Christian the King James only, right? I see he did that to John MacArthur once.
Right.
Anyway, Survey of Christian Epistemology,
yeah,
is that what you're going?
And growing up as a philosophy, or not growing up, but being a philosophy major.
Jonathan reading Hegel, philosophy.
Reading Hegel and Kant as a 3-year-old. Daddy, no. Daddy, what is the dialectic?
Right. To be is to be perceived. That's what you said, Dad. No, the thing that hooked me was Van Til makes in some of his beginning, his first few books, makes some pretty sweeping statements. And for any philosophy major, as soon as you hear those sweeping statements, you think, really? You're just like, I don't know. There might have been one guy back there. But
these are pretty smart guys.
When he, and for me, Survey was almost like Van Til saying, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is.
Yeah.
And basically saying, you know, I'm putting a pox on all your houses, and I'm going to show you the pox. And I'm like, when I read that book, I'm like, dude, this guy is, I didn't say dude in my head, but I thought to myself.
Yeah, you did.
That's what your internal process is. That's part of the noetic effects of sin on you.
Right.
You say dude in your mind.
No, but I thought to myself, man, this philosophy major is both helpful but futile at the same time because of this pox he has put, as far as futile in the sense that it's not going to arrive at any answers, or it's not going to begin with an.
That's where it's
answer.
Helpful to look at it more as a history degree,
right?
If you look at it more as a history of thought, rather than going to a, you know, a secular institution looking for answers,
right? We're
not going to find the answers, but we need to study this sort of thing. In one sense, we could say much of Texas A&M or any other university, any other secular university's philosophy degree is a history of unbelieving thought.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, that's one way to call it. And it's good for us to know that. We need to know that as apologists.
And the futility is, you know, philosophy in and of itself. But we recognize one of the subtitles of the books that we talked about, philosophy in the service of theology.
Yeah, we don't reject philosophy. We just reject unbelieving philosophy.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And as long as it's serving theology, really anything serving theology has a warrant to it. Yeah. So it's how you use it, not in and of itself.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know if you guys want to segue, but the other thing that I was thinking was a contrast between what Plantinga terms as quote-unquote reformed epistemology. And that gets really – that gets into heavy philosophical concepts. But that was another one that I read at Gordon. I picked up because Plantinga –
You were in Plantinga back then.
Yeah. Mm. He was Van Til and Plantinga were tracking the same way for me because Plantinga, I recognize he was a force to be reckoned with. I mean, he was doing things that other atheists and other philosophers who didn't have an inkling of Christian thought in them were paying attention to this guy because he was doing things in the field of philosophy that no one else was doing.
Yeah.
So I picked him up and warranted Christian belief, especially. I would say if you're into philosophical concepts and going that route in apologetics, pick that up just to see a type of methodology that can really meet an argument on its own terms and dismantle it like nobody else can.
Yeah.
He really is a powerhouse.
Yeah, he's picking up insights from Thomas Reed, but he's actually doing something with them.
Yeah.
And oftentimes we'll hear of Thomas Reed and what he thought common sense realism and just think, that's stupid.
Right.
But Plantinga is he's professor of philosophy at Notre Dame,
mm-hmm,
at our mother, and he... Yeah, he's doing some interesting work. He is a force to be reckoned with. That's probably an understatement.
Yeah, yeah, when I was reading Plantinga, of course, it was in the rubric of Dr. Oliphant. But when I was reading Plantinga, what I found actually most helpful was not, you know, his sort of his reformed epistemology.
Right.
No. I actually found his critiques most helpful as far as... And Van Til, you know, makes it clear that, you know, philosophy is a constant pendulum swing between rationalism and rationalism. And Plantinga is more in the rationalist camp, of course. Mm-hmm. But for all these irrationalists, if you want to critique them better than somebody probably in the reformed confessional arena that's a Van Tilian, just look to Plantinga. He does the grunt work for you.
Yeah,
and so
that's exactly right.
I really enjoyed, you know, getting that out of. Out of Plantinga, if that's nothing good. Else.
Well, for me, the book that got me hooked, definitely. I had been reading Van
What's
Til
the
for
book that got you hooked, Camden?
Well, I point this out because it's interesting because it's different for all of us.
Uh-huh.
And we had this discussion before with six or seven guys, and everyone named a different book.
Huh.
So I don't remember if you recall, but it, we had this discussion maybe about a year and a half ago over at Earthbred and Brewery.
Oh, yeah. Oh, nice.
And,
good joint.
Then we got into a debate about the best albums of all time. And,
oh, nice. Oh, let's do that. That's episode 19 or something. Oh, I could go forever with that.
All right. For me, it was now I can't remember. Intro to Systematic Theology.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason being is because he dealt with the problem of the one and many, which I've always been fascinated with.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that as one of, if not the basic problem of human existence, at least in terms of our knowledge, trying to account for how we can know those sorts of things. And Van Til presents the triune revealed God of Scripture as the only solution to that problem.
Yeah.
And for me, that was just a beautiful thing and an amazing thing and really locked me into a Van Tilian apologetic. So that's a tough read. That is a really tough read. And the binding I read it in is ugly. It is those old brown ones, you know, from the 70s, the photolitho-printed ones from the Dendalk Foundation.
Right.
But now Dr. Edgar has one from PNR that you can read with his annotations. It's much more readable.
Yeah.
But it's still dense, heavy sledding.
And so that's interesting. You know, you kind of unlocked it from a systematic side.
I did. I didn't really think of it at the time that way because I was thinking I was reading, you know, really great philosophy stuff because I didn't have any philosophy background. I had no philosophy classes in college, nothing.
Hmm.
And I got my philosophical understanding backwards from reading Van Til, understanding his critique, then going back and reading the guys. And so I got all my vocabulary, everything. In a reverse direction.
Mm-hmm.
And still now filling out my philosophical understanding, but I've done it completely backwards. So for all of you out there who love apologetics, who haven't had a lick of philosophy, there is hope.
Yeah.
Not that I know much, but you can come to a pretty good understanding of philosophical concepts through the back door. It's definitely possible if you're willing to work at it. So... those are some books from Van Til, some other books on apologetics. Is there anything else we wanted to mention before
I just
we close
want to
up
say
shop?
That is interesting on the intro to systematics and then his later writing on the new modernism, which deals not necessarily with apologetics per se, but with systematics in that this is he's talking about other believers and what they're proposing, but he does systematics that in a way in which cannot be ripped apart from apologetics.
Yeah.
Their problem is an apologetic problem. They have an unbelieving skunk in their closet that's causing all this, you know, heterodoxy. And that's you know, the case for
skunking it up.
Right. For Bart, it's Kant. Right. And so,
I know, man. And you find that I've been reading a lot. Listeners will know Karl Rahner.
Right. Yeah.
And Kant Catholic. Screws it all up.
Yeah. Right.
You start to eat that stuff and, you know, and incorporate it. You're going in some weird directions.
So that's why apologetics systematic
Hegel
is so
too.
Closely knit. Right. Yeah. Same thing with Hegel. And so,
and Rahner does both of them.
Yeah. And Heidegger.
And to piggyback on, you know, keying in systematic theological wise, common grace in the gospel is one that a lot of people say was their link or their bridge between systematics and apologetics. Yeah. You know, Bob LaRocca, I think that's the one that he was on a couple episodes ago. He was saying that that is hands down, I think, his favorite one for a lot of the reasons that
you were
saying.
That's the point of contact, really, trying to understand. That's the bridge between Kuiper and Warfield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's right.
And and it's interesting. So if you want an understanding of how apologetics can actually go forth, if we hold to an antithesis, that's where you go. Common grace in the gospel.
Yeah.
Fun. Well, you can find Jonathan and Jared several places, WTS.edu, also Facebook.com/Westminster Online and YouTube.com/Westminster Online. You can find out all sorts of things that we are doing at reformedforum.org. If you would like to get a hold of us, please email us at mail@reformedforum.org. What?
WTS Books is a good resource for picking up
Water. Yeah, you can visit WTSbooks.com as well and pick up a lot of these books. Chun and the gang will be very happy if you go there and buy everything we've mentioned.
Chun and the gang.
Chun and the gang.
And it's probably the only place you can find
the
these
70s.
Books.
That's right, yeah.
Hands down the best Amazon, resource. But don't go there. Westminster is actually cheaper than Amazon.
That's right, compare them.
Compare them. They'll match the price too, but they're already cheaper. Reformforum.org, you can mail email us, mail@reformedforum.org, or send us a voicemail. Don't worry about anyone picking up. It's strictly a voicemail. No one will answer the phone. Call us with your questions or your comments at 440-97-FORUM. Thanks for listening. We hope you join us again in the Reformed Media Review.